welcome. Glad you're here. You glad? All right. Well, we're going to have a good time. If you got your Bibles, then turn to Matthew chapter 9, verse 27. If you've got your electronic devices, type in Matthew chapter 9, verse 27 after they're muted, and we'll get going. I want to talk to you today about unlearning your limited beliefs. How many of you have ever had to unlearn something? You know, you ever unlearn something? Was it easy? Not easy, is it? Why? Because it's a belief. You really believe it's true. You believe it's a fact. That's why you believe it, correct? But unlearning is the greatest hindrance that any of us have for not only achieving the goals that we want to have in life, but also for even setting them. Most of you haven't even set goals yet because you don't believe they'll happen. You don't believe in yourself and your capabilities of bringing them forth. So unlearning, limited beliefs is one of the greatest hindrance that you or I will ever face in life. So I want to talk about that today. I want to look at that. So Matthew chapter 9, verse 27. It says, when he, of course Jesus, had gone indoors, the blind man came to him, and he asked them, do you what? Do you believe? That's got to start there. Anything that we're going to acquire externally must begin internally. Do you believe that I'm able to do this? Yes, Lord, they replied. And then he touched their eyes. Now, I just want to throw this in real quickly. Don't notice that Jesus touched people when he prayed for them. So that's why we do it. So he says, then he touched their eyes and said, watch, according to your faith, what's going to happen to you from this point on in life is going to be determined by something going on inside, inwardly in you right now. Your faith. Your faith. What is faith? Faith, of course, substance things hoped for, evidence of things not seen. But I want to look at it a little differently. I want you to see that faith is what you really believe. Faith is what you're certain about. Faith is what's really down deep inside in your belief system. According to your faith, now, I want you to read this to me. I want you to read this part back to me. Will it be done? Okay. Can you read? Talk to me. Read this. According to your faith, read the rest of it. Will? I'll read it for you. Bless your hearts. Will it be done to you? Does it say to you or for you? To you. Listen, there's a big difference in two and four. Something being done to you and something being done for you. Big difference. I'm going to talk about it shortly, but just want to make sure you get it. See, life does things to us. And it's all related back to what's going on inside of you, your beliefs. Now, I want to read this to you from the Message Bible. It really is powerful, these last two verses. Verse 28 says, Jesus said to them, do you really believe? Doesn't use the word faith. It says really believe. That's what faith is what you really believe. Do you really believe I can do this? And they said, why, yes, Master. We got this. We got it. And he touched their eyes and said, read that back to me. Become what you believe. Whoa. Every single one of us are becoming what we believe. What was going to happen to these blind guys from this point on in their lives externally was determined by what they were believing on the inside right then. They were becoming what they believed. Every single one of us are going through this. And nothing in life opens our eyes to our potential and to what we're able to accomplish in life like belief. Like limiting beliefs will limit us from having what we can have in life and establishing and also obtaining goals in life. Our eyes are opened because we believe we can. Jesus said this. He says, it's according to your faith, it will be done to you, not for you. Listen, life does to us what we believe. Life does things to us, good or bad, positive or negative, according to what we believe. Jesus was big on this. I want you to know he was constantly talking about it's from the inside out. It's your life is messed up because of what's in you, not what comes into you. He says it's not what goes into the man that defiles the man. It's what comes out of the man. That's what messes up his life. And contrarily, it's what makes your life good. What's good and what's bad? It's because of what we believe inwardly. And there's some things inside of us that just we shouldn't be believing. Whether you like it or not, your belief dictates your life. Dictates your life. Whether you like it or not. I don't like that. Well, I don't care. I mean, it doesn't matter. This is the way it works. It's just like gravity. It works. The way it happens. So this is what. Now, we all have limiting beliefs. We all have things in our lives that we need to work on concerning our belief systems. Now, the way we've got to approach this and correct this is by initially learning that the things that we believe are subjective. In other words, we've subjected ourselves to these things in life. And that's why we believe them. Every single belief that you have, positive or negative, is not based on fact. It's subjective. You've obtained this information somewhere along the way. When you came into this world, you didn't have any beliefs. When you came into this world, you didn't have any religious beliefs. You didn't know if you were a Baptist or a charismatic or a Catholic. You didn't know because you didn't have any beliefs. You didn't have any political beliefs. You didn't know if you were a Democrat or Republican. You have to learn all of these beliefs. You have to learn these aspects in life. And they come upon us, and it's an accumulation of all the information that I've obtained all through my life. And it begins with my childhood, with my parenting. And in childhood, my parenting inflict their beliefs on me. It's not that they intentionally do it. It's just that that's just the way it happens. And all of us know that most of the time our parents were right, but there were times when our parents weren't so right. But that was inflicted upon us, and it's become a belief sometimes within us. And I've heard parents do some terrible things to children, like say to them, "You're stupid. You're ignorant. You're never going to amount to anything." Now, I've heard parents do the opposite and say, "You can do anything you want to. We're going to see if we can find exactly where you fit in life. We're going to help you get there, and we're going to do all we can. You can do everything," like a song. Jesus can do everything, but so can you. We're going to see that in just a second. So we get these things. Now, when a parent does that to their child, whether it's positive or whether it's negative, it's going to go with them for the rest of their lives. It's a belief now. I must be stupid. We have our friends now, of course. Friends, when you're a child, you know, children are cute and sweet and pretty and all that stuff, but they're mean. I mean, they'll tell people mean things, right? "You're fat. You're ugly." And our friends did that to us as well. "Delbert, you can't do that." Well, maybe you're right. Huh? And so our friends inflict upon us positive and negative beliefs as well. And so we go on in life. Our instructors are the same way. We have teachers and coaches and instructors all through life. And whether they maybe say it or not, sometimes a teacher will make you feel like you're dumb. A coach will make you feel like you're the most uncoordinated person in the whole world. What are you doing on the field? And maybe they're provoking you or attempting to provoke you. But listen, what you hear and what goes on inside of you is, "Now, I'm not worth anything." And so that becomes a belief as well. Education sometimes plays a big part in our belief system. A lot of people believe because they're not educated, they didn't go a long ways in school, that they can't accomplish much in life. That's not true. I'm going to talk about it in a few minutes. CEOs of Fortune 500 companies, some of them didn't have much education at all, but look what they've accomplished. Why? Because they found their niche. They found their genius. They found out they unlearned those limiting beliefs, and they became something. So all of these things and 1,000 other things in my life have accumulated to form the beliefs in which I have right now. And some of those I need to unlearn, so that I can accomplish what God has for me to accomplish and how what He's made me and created me to do. Now, I don't know if you're familiar with all of this or not, but did you know that Albert Einstein was sent home and they said he had a learning deficiency? Albert Einstein. I mean, he's synoptic with genius, right? He's the poster child for genius. He's the picture boy. I mean, think about that. Theory of relativity, all these geometric equations and all the things that he came up with and understood What a waste it would have been. The teachers sent him home, told his parents that he had a learning disorder. His parents didn't buy into that. And they went and they got him a schooling, an education where he could be appreciated and where his skills could be developed and his genius could come out. CEOs, I've mentioned them earlier, in the Fortune 500 companies. In school, the teachers said they're not too bright. They're not going to go very far. A lot of them, you read the biographies and you'll find this is out. But what happened? Well, they found their genius. They found their intelligence. They were able to take this and use this and unlearn what teachers and people said about them. And they were able to have a good life. They were able to have to do things that most folks will never do and accomplish in life. They unlearned what they needed to unlearn so they could accomplish and learn what they needed to. See, that's the point, is we can never learn what we need to as long as we have something blocking us learning it. If we think that we can't learn it, until we unlearn some things, we can't learn other things. Did you know that Thomas Edison, the greatest inventor in our modern age, was expelled from school? Did you know that his teacher says that it was not worth the money that it would cost to educate him? Thomas Edison. He invented the phonograph. Now, you know, the phonograph is something we don't really relate to in our time too much, but it was the granddaddy of our cell phones and anything that records and plays music. And also, he was big telegraph. Telegraph and the telegraph and of course that's the granddaddy of telephones these all came from Thomas Edison. He invented the light bulb, right? And you know how many times it took him to invent it? You've heard the story, and how many times it took him to be what we call successful? He calls every one of his times successful. He learned a way that it would not work, and so this is what it is. And Thomas Edison, he owns 1,093 U.S. patents. That means he created and invented 1,093 things. That's amazing to me. What a waste it would have been had he allowed those limiting beliefs to tell him and hold him back to that he was worth nothing and he couldn't even be educated. What a waste that would be. So what happened? He found his genius, his intuitiveness. He was able to see things and understand things that hasn't even popped in the minds of other people. Every single one of us have this ability. Limiting belief holds us, everyone, back. It stops us from doing what we are called and what we are able to do in our lifetimes. Self-limiting beliefs hold us back for a lifetime. Right. Even if based from a casual remark of a person or even from a joke. They hold us back in life and stop us from accomplishing the things that we need to accomplish. But the good news is this. We learned all those beliefs. That means we can unlearn all those beliefs. Now, this is what I'm really after. There's some area in your life, if you think back, where somebody said you couldn't do it, or you maybe even thought you couldn't do it, or someone thought you couldn't do it, but whatever, it was inferred that you were incapable of doing it. But you did something. You made up your mind, for no other reason but to show them that you could do it, and you did it. Am I right? So what does that tell us? What does that teach us? It tells us and teaches us that beliefs that we have learned are not based on fact. They're subjective. It's just because of the information that you've now obtained and what's been inferred upon you, not necessarily fact. And so what we've got to do is learn how to handle this and what to do about this. So, do you remember the guy? See, the truth of the matter is that inside of every single one of us, there's the ability to do everything, anything. There's more potential in you right this very minute than you will ever fulfill, ever use your whole life. You'll never use up all the potential that is in you right now. You remember the guy we studied not long ago? He was a father, and he brought his son to Jesus. He brought him to the disciples. The disciples couldn't deliver the boy. He had a demon, and he finally got to Jesus, and he comes to Jesus, and he's telling Jesus all the things that this demon does to Jesus. I want to read this to you. It's in Mark chapter 9 and verse 22. It says this. It has often thrown him into fire or water to kill him. But if you can, do anything. That's the stupidest thing you could ever ask Jesus, if you can. But if you can do anything, take pity on us and help us. What's Jesus' response? If you can. Now, I want to point out a couple of things. First of all, he's questioning this guy's intelligence. But secondly of all, he says, if you can, not if I can. He didn't say, if I can. He says, if you can. He says this. Everything. Now, make me read this correctly, okay? Everything is possible for him who believes in God. Did I read it accurately? Make me read it accurately. What does it really say? Everything is possible for him who believes. Now listen, there are some principles in life that are like gravity. They work on everybody, about everything. If you believe, even if you're the biggest sinner in the world, but if you believe you can do it, and if you believe long enough and hard enough and work for it, you can do it. You do understand that I know you're supposed to believe in God, right? God wants us to have faith in Him ultimately. He wants us to believe in Him ultimately. But does God want you to believe in yourself? Does God want you to have self-confidence or faith in yourself? Absolutely He does. He wants you to believe that inside of you right this very minute is more potential than anything that you can ever imagine. More potential than you'll ever use in your entire life. There's a scripture in Psalm, and most of you are familiar with it. We've used it many times in our temperament studies. Psalm 139. I'm going to read it to us. Psalms 139. It talks about our genius, the genius that is in each one of us. For you created my inmost being, verse 13 says. You knit me together in my mother's womb. And I praise you because. Now, look at why he's praising him. I praise you because. I am fearfully and wonderfully made. You did a good job on me, God. This is what David's thinking about himself. You think he's limited in his beliefs? No, David thinks he's a pretty fantastic dude. And this is how God wants us to think about ourselves. That we're wonderfully made. We're geniusly made. Inside of us is so much potential. He goes on. Your works are wonderful. You made me, created me so I can do some wonderful things. I can do some wonderful works. I know that fully well. David knew this. Do we know this? What do we think about ourselves? See, David thought he was a genius. And he was. I mean, think about it. Now, he had some deficiencies. But David really thought he was a genius. And when it came to being a king, he was a genius. When it came to dominating, David was a genius. And we're still 4,000 years later now, we're still talking about David because of his genius. Hey, of all the kings Israel had, David is the one that you think about. When it came to warfare, when it came to dominion, when it came to conquering, when it came to a kingdom, David was a genius. Now, he had some things he had to unlearn. His brothers called him runny. His daddy, Jesse, put him kind of down, just threw him out there with the sheep. But inside of David, he unlearned all that stuff, and he became genius. Every single one of us, inside of us, has the more potential than we will ever use in our entire lifetimes. But we've got to unlearn some things so that we can bring it up and that it can come out into our lives. Now, here's kind of where I want to get to today. And I just really want to make sure you get... See, I want to say this. There's no one better than you to do anything. There's no one smarter than you. Here's the way it really is that they may be better at it right now than I am. They may be smarter at it right now than I am. But it's just because I haven't learned it yet. I can be as good as they are at it if I work hard enough at it and if I work long enough at it. I can be as smart as they are at it if I want to learn and work hard enough at it. And learn about it. I can be just as smart and just as good as they can. They're just ahead of me. That doesn't mean they're better than me. And it doesn't mean they're smarter than me. Now, there's a guy, and his name is Howard Garner. And he is he's a professor, but he likes to study people. And he did this study on people, and he came up, after interviewing and working with thousands of people, came up with the understanding that people have intelligences, plural. Intelligence, plural, intelligences. And some studies, if you'll go online and look and study it out, you'll find that some studies show as many as 10 intelligences. But Howard Gardner, his study shows that there are 7 different intelligences. And what I want you to see is inside of you right now are at least 7 intelligences. And in one of those intelligences, you are genius or at least extremely, extremely good at. You're extreme at one of those, at least one of those things, and probably more. Now, the sad part of this is that in school, we're only measured in 2 of these intelligences. We're measured in mathematical skills, and we're measured in English or verbal skills. So if we do well in those things, then we're considered smart and intelligent. But if that's not your niche, like mine, in school, you don't come out that well. You're kind of looked at as lesser, and you graduate feeling kind of lesser. Where all those that are good in English and good in math come out and as grads, I mean they're the high echelons of the graduation class. What if that's not your niche? What if math isn't your deal? Or what if English isn't your deal? Well, let's say you are. Say you're really sharp in math. You are a whiz-bang at math. That means you did pretty well in school, most likely. And you come out and you do an accounting, you're an architect, or you do engineering, scientific stuff. You're able to use your mathematics skills to do what you need to do, and you really excel at it. But if that's not your deal, let's say you're not real good at math, but man, can you draw? Can you paint? Can you design colors and match these things well? Are you artistic? Inside of you is a mini Michelangelo or Picasso, because you have this ability, this talent, this genius inside of you to blend colors and make things look pretty. What if that's your genius? Maybe that's not it, but perhaps you're intuitive, like you're like Thomas Edison. You have this unique ability to look at a problem and think about it and ponder it, and you come up with this answer that nobody's even pondered or seen before. And it's not just in building or designing inventions like machines, but maybe like my wife. She has this amazing ability to just sit and ponder about a problem in a situation, and she'll come up with a solution that I haven't even thought about. Maybe that's you. You can counsel people. You can hear their situations and their problems, and you can just come up with these amazing solutions that, that's a good idea. I hadn't even thought about that. What if that's your genius? What if you're a genius maybe in not of those, but man, you're a musical genius. You can come up with a song in a moment. There's always a song in your heart. He's that way. You hang out with him. He just makes up these songs. Where were we? We were in Chicago. Coming out from, and he's coming out and he's singing. He's making up these songs in the airport about flying home. And it's just amazing. Maybe that's your genius. You always hear the song. You always have a tune in your ear. Now listen, some of us, like me, don't even hand me a musical instrument. It's horrible. In fact, don't even ask me to sing and don't stand close to me when I do. But that's not my genius, but it is his. So what is your genius? What is your genius? Where is it that you really are sharp like David, that you're fearfully and you're wonderfully made? Where is that? Where is it that God has created inside of you all of this gift and these talents and this genius that you can do some wonderful works? Where is that? Maybe you are linguistic. Maybe you are a verbal type of a person, and man, you love language. You can do all the syllables and synonyms and anonyms, and you love word studies, and you love to do these word puzzles, and you're real good at that kind of stuff. You go to a foreign land, you pick up their languages really well. You learn this stuff so quickly and so easily. Maybe that is you. Maybe that is your genius, but maybe it's not. Maybe you're a type of a person who's a kinesthetic type of a person, that you understand the body, and maybe you're a therapist, and you can work with people, or maybe you're a very coordinated person in kinesthetic aspects, and you're a sports person. You can play sports. You're very coordinated. Maybe that's where your genius is. You may not have done well at all in mathematics or in English, but man, you put you on a ball field, watch you go. Watch you become a millionaire. I mean, have you ever heard some of these athletes talk? But man, you put up, give them a ball. They're genius. Maybe that's not you either. So maybe you're more you're an entrepreneur type person. You have this unique ability to build a business. You can make a business. You understand how to work with people, how to be creative, and how to make things work together so that a business will function. Maybe that's your genius. Or maybe you're like me. None of those really work out real well for you. But inside of you, there's this genius. There's this aspect of you where you're interpersonal or intrapersonal, where you're really interested in how people work and how people think and how you work and how you think and how you can help other people think better and think differently, like a psychologist or a psychiatrist or a good preacher. So maybe where is your genius? But we all have one, you see. Every single one of us has his genius. And the goal is to get that out. Because once you find where you're fearfully and wonderfully made, once you find the genius that is inside of you, what will begin to happen is you'll start unlearning those limiting beliefs. What you'll start doing is being released from what's holding you back and being propelled towards your success in life and where you're truly genius. Now, I believe in what I'm about to tell you so much, and what I have told you so far, is I want to take a few moments here and just show you something that I've learned in the past couple of weeks. I have you the web address in your notes, so I'm not going to throw that up there to you. It's a clean site, even though the address kind of hints another way. So skip that address part, and let's go to the next one. If you go to that page, then to that address, you're going to come to this page here. And what I want you to see is on this particular website, this is where mine automatically opens. Yours might not. So what you do is you'll scroll down until you come to this area where it gives you these examinations. It calls them tests, but they're really evaluations. And what you'll find there is a multi-intelligence test. And what it's looking for is, where is your genius? And so we start with the first one up there. It says free multiple intelligence test. And this specific one is self-calculating. But before I show you what's on that one, I want you to see something, because Judy and I were talking about this past week. It says right here, for young people, this particular test here. Oh, put it back. Put it back. There we go. This particular test right here, it says is for young people. All right? So I was telling Judy this week, I wish to goodness somebody had told me when I was a young man, when I was a student in school, stuff like this. That inside of me was a genius. And Delbert, if you'll find that genius, if you'll find that what's inside of you, how God has fearfully and wonderfully made you, if you'll find that, there's no limit to what you can do and what you can accomplish. As parents, you owe it to your kids. Yeah. You need to go to this site and check this out. And so right here, it says this, it gives you this link called Fantasticat. So give me the next one now. And if you click there, you'll come to this page. And it's for children. I mean, how young do you have to be to start finding out what your purpose in life is? So you can find some neat stuff there. But to get to where I want us to look at and where I want us to go, we'll go back to that first page. Click the next one. And if we click on that first one up there, it'll take you to this link. Click. All right, there you go. And you'll find this. And then this is, you want to go open or you want to save it. So just open it up. Okay, click. And then it brings you to this. This is the evaluation page. And I think there's like 60 different questions here. And it's about multiple intelligence test. And it's a very simple thing. It's not a test. It's an evaluation. You can't fail this. And over here in the score, it asks you the question, and you put a 1, 2, 3, or 4 over here, according to the dimension in which you agree with the statement that's being made here. Like this one. I like to learn more about myself. I'm a 4 on that. Maybe you're not. You know? Or I can play a musical instrument. I'm a 1 on that. I'm a 0, actually. But the 1 is the lowest I can get. So what you do is you just go through the whole thing, and it's about 60 questions. Next one, please. Click. All right, and then you come up, and it automatically figures it out for you right here. And it's not going to make a bit of sense to you. And then it gives you this graph. on this particular person, on this particular person's craft, don't even give them a musical instrument. They can't play it, right? But now ask them some questions about how people work and how they function on the inside, and you'll find out they're pretty sharp there. But anyway, you won't understand any of this, and then here's the listings of the seven different intelligences. Won't make a bit of sense. You won't know what it's talking about. So you go back to the first page where the link originally takes you, and you come back to this page, and then you scroll up above this. And if you scroll up above this, you'll find this place here where it's all explained. All these different intelligences, all these types are explained. And not only explained like a linguistic person, an English-type person, words and language, that's their thing, man. They written and spoken words, retention, interpretation of words. And what they're good at doing is being writers and lawyers and journalists and speakers and trainers and copywriters and English teachers and poets and editors. And it tells you how these things work out in our lives when we're using them to the potential in which they have. And how these related tasks also work. And all seven of them here. Give me the next click, please. And so when you go on down, and there's musical and kinesthetic and spatial visual, artistic people, artists, designers, cartoonists, story writers, story architects, and photographers, and all these things are right there. So going down, next click, please. And here I am, intrapersonal. And it talks about what I should be doing and how things like people like me can pull out the genius that's in them. And this is the two where I was graded out the highest. Now, sometimes I'm just good at these kinds of things. But sometimes, folks, I'm genius. And I'm not saying that to be boasting or patting myself on the back. I just know I can come out sometimes with some things that rattle your world, that are just genius. Where did that come from? I mean, I even ask, where did that come from? You owe it to yourself. There is a world of information on that site. You owe it to yourself. You owe it to your children to go and check it out. Now, the first time I took it, I didn't get much out of it. I was pretty level all the way across. I waited a couple of days. I took it again, and I started seeing some things. I didn't know what I was looking for originally. So I went back again. I did it again last night, and I finally start seeing how these things are really working out in my life because I'm understanding what it's after and what I'm after. So you owe it to yourself to really do that. Our goal is to reach in there and to find the potential in which we all have, and which is inside of every single one of us. Because once we find it, we're released. We're released from what's holding us and binding us and keeping us back. And we're projected out there into where we can really begin to accomplish some amazing and some great things. So let's imagine real quickly for a moment that there's a belief store you can go to, like a computer store where they sell software for your computers or your iPhones or your iPads or whatever. And you can go in there and you can buy any belief that you wanted to buy. What belief would you buy? Well, what belief would you want? Now, you've got it. Find it. This is your store I'm showing you. Okay, now what you've got to do is get your mind, your soul, and your heart programmed. We've been talking about this. How do you do this? How do you reprogram? How do you upgrade, update? How do you do this? Well, we want to spend the next few minutes that I have with us to talk about this and figure this thing out. How do you do this? Well, there is a principle that's called, make sure I say it correctly because sometimes I say it incorrectly, reversibility. And you're saying, Delbert, you're making this stuff up. No, I'm not. You could go online and look at it. It's a principle that's called reversibility. Because when you begin really trying to unlearn your beliefs, you're going to find that it's not very easy, that it's very, very difficult, in fact. And you're not even going to believe it. It's going to require more than saying, I'm not going to believe that anymore. That won't work. You've got to do some other things. It is called the rule or the law of reversibility. In other words, you think backwards. You reverse it. See, what you doubt yourself. You don't have any time yet where you have developed any kind of faith in yourself. Your mind's going to cause you to doubt. Your mind is your enemy concerning these kinds of things. And so what you've got to do is this. You've got to act like, pretend like, that you are the person that you want to be. Already, you've got to fake it until you make it. You've got to act like, dress like, talk like, walk like, think like. You have all the talents and all the abilities of the person that you want to become. And when you start thinking like this and acting like this in this reversibility aspect, then what happens is you start feeling like that. I go, Dad, what are you talking about? Well, let me give you a personal example. Maybe you want, like me, to in your company, in your organization, that you want to become a leadership. You want to get into supervision. And so you want to excel in it. So how do you do that? Well, when Judy and I first got married, I was a kid. I was 19, 20 years old. I was a boy still. And I was working in Atlanta making minimum wage. Well, I found a job in Griffin, where we live, making minimum wage. So I took that job. But I hated that job. I didn't like it at all. Another job came available that made a little bit more than minimum wage. Not a lot, but a little bit more than minimum wage. So I took that job. Well, I liked that job better. And my job was in a lab. I was a lab technician of quality control. I run the whole quality control department and just make a little bit more than minimum wage. And I had the whole access to the entire plant and checking quality and carding and spooling and spinning and warping and all these areas. I was the checker, quality checker guy. But I wanted to be in supervision. I wanted to be where I found out now, later, years later, where I really click, where I really excel at working with people and working with myself. So anyway, I wanted to do this. So what did I do? I came up with this little divisive plan. The superintendent, his office was just across from mine. And every day, he wore a white shirt and a tie to work. Every day. And he'd get there a little early, have a cup of coffee. And so I started wearing a white shirt and a tie to work. I didn't have to. And in fact, people would ask me, Delbert, why are you wearing a white shirt and a tie? I said, I'm dressing up. I really am. I'm dressing up. I'm not dressing down. I'm dressing up. And so I would get to work a little earlier. I would have a cup of coffee with him. I would ask him his advice about life. I would take his advice, and I would tell him how I worked it out. And what I wanted to do was go up. I would find out what he was focused on and which department he was really focused on in the whole plant. And then I would go into that plant because I had access to it. I would go into that plant, and I would look for reasons that that plant was causing him problems. Why it wasn't producing, why the quality wasn't what it was supposed to be. And I would flood his desk with data that I had learned, that I had researched, that I had acquired for him. And I did this on a consistent basis. So about a month, 2 months at the most later, he comes into my lab. He props up on the counter, and he looks at me, and he says, Delbert, he said, would you like a shot at supervision? He said, what would you think about that? He says, now, we got some limitations. And I said, Bob, I would love to do that. I want to be in supervision. That's what I really want to be in. And he said, well, we got some limitations. You're very young. You're going to be overseeing and watching over people that are, you're 20 years old, you know, 40, 50, 60-year-old men and women. And, you know, I'm a little concerned about that. He said, but I watch you around them, and they respond well to you. You work well with them. He said, I want to give it a shot. I said, okay. Well, when you want me to start? He said, how about tomorrow? Overnight. My income tripled or quadrupled. What if you found your genius or you found your area in life? What would it do to your life? How would it change you? What if perhaps there was inside of you this entrepreneur, but the way you believe that you don't believe you could ever begin a business, you couldn't start a job, a business your own. But what if inside of you there was that ability? How would it change your life? Well, one thing that it would probably do is double, triple, quadruple your income. It would change your life. It would create you a brand new reality. It did for me. What we did is we built a brand new home. The cars we drove got a lot better and a lot nicer. The clothes we wore were nicer. Our whole lives changed. We started taking some real vacations. I mean, everything about us, we created a brand new reality. And I still do that today, every single thing I do, concerning even fishing. If I want to go fishing, I'll find me somebody that I can emulate, that I can model after. I just don't want them to take me to go catch a fish. I want to learn how to catch the fish. I want to teach somebody else how to do it. And so I let them, I model from them. Watching television, watching preachers on television. You guys really don't know how many preachers you've really listened to over the years, because I've been so many. I'll look at them. I'll see how they talk, they walk, they act, they present. I see how they say things. And I'll dress like them. I'll do my best to talk like them, because it's working for them. And I want to be like that. I want to be successful. So what you've got to do as you're doing this reversibility law is you've got to find somebody that does what you want to do and is who you want to be. And you've got to model after that person. Inside of you is this world, but outside of you is a world. And the world outside that you become is determined and dictated by the world inside of you. And we've talked about this. We've got to change the world inside, and then it will change outside. We've got to do what we've talked about. We've got to get past the carnal mind, into the soul, into the subconscious areas of our being. We've got to get into the heart, because it's in the heart that it becomes reality. We talked about it last time, how Jesus worked through his senses. He would see it, he would hear it, he would smell it, he would taste it. His goal was to get to Jerusalem, but he rendered it out. He set out for Jerusalem. He set forth. And what we've got to do is get our whole senses working so that our soul can get it, because the soul is the gatekeeper to the heart. And you can't get it into your heart. And it can't become reality until it gets into the soul. But then it gets into the heart and it becomes reality. Delbert, are you making all this up? I mean, you know, no. Do you have a scripture for that, Delbert? Of course I do. We've read it already twice, but let's read it again. It's in Mark chapter 11, verse 23. It says this. I tell you the truth. This is Jesus talking. Do you believe Jesus is telling you the truth here? Do you really? Well, act like it, because this is what he's going to tell us to do. If anyone says to this mountain, now let's stop there a second. If Christians say to this mountain, what does it say? Anyone. It's the law of gravity. This will work for anyone, believers, unbelievers. If this principle works, if anyone says to this mountain, go throw yourself into the sea. That's the goal, throw the mountain into the sea. And does not doubt where? In his heart. Doesn't matter if you doubt in your mind or your soul. You can't doubt in your heart. And so what you've got to do is do this law of reversibility. And you've got to get the doubt, the limiting beliefs that are inside of us out. But believes. But does what? Believes that what he says will happen, it will be done. Go ahead. Done what? Done for him. It's involuntary. It's like your subconscious mind, your heart beats, your lungs breathe, your eyes blink, your respiratory system works, your digestive system works. It's all involuntary because it's in the subconscious dimension. And once you get it into the soul, into the subconscious dimension, it will be done for you. Because the soul is going to put it into the heart. And he goes on in here and says it. Because that's what he says will happen. It will be done for him. Therefore, I tell you, whatever you ask in prayer. Prayer isn't a list that we give to God. Prayer is a rendering process where we see it, where we hear it, where we smell it, where we taste it, where we touch it, where we become it, where we fake it until we make it. That's what he says here. Well, let me show you. Therefore, I tell you, whatever you ask in prayer, believe that what? That you have received it, that you're faking it until you're making it. That's what Jesus said. And it what? Go ahead. Finish it up. It'll be whose? This is what life will do to you. We all must reprogram ourselves. If we're ever going to be the fearful and wonderful creations that God's made us to be, if the genius is ever coming out, we've got to learn how to unlearn limiting beliefs. Nothing stops us like our beliefs. Let's pray.